Gambling the Alms, Abuse and Court Strategies, Summary. This week's piece examines a question that lies at the intersection of criminal justice, church governance, and the clergy sexual abuse crisis. Why do some Catholic priests accused of sexual abuse reject plea bargains and instead gamble on costly criminal trials despite the historical record suggesting that such strategies rarely succeed? Even more importantly, the article asks who pays for these gambles and why church authorities allow them to happen in the first place. The article opens with the recent cases of Anthony Odiong and Urbano Vasquez. Although the two priests come from very different backgrounds, they share a striking characteristic. Both were offered opportunities to avoid the uncertainty of jury trials through plea negotiations, yet both chose to proceed to trial. The article argues that this decision is difficult to understand because criminal jury trials are expensive, risky, and generally avoided whenever possible by prosecutors, courts, and defendants alike. Despite those realities, both men elected to wager their futures on acquittal. That choice becomes even more puzzling when viewed against the Catholic Church's long-standing complaints regarding the financial consequences of abuse litigation. Dioceses and religious institutions frequently point to abuse-related costs as justification for bankruptcies, parish mergers, school closures, and reductions in charitable activities. The article therefore raises a provocative question: if church leaders insist that resources are scarce, why are substantial sums being spent defending priests whose chances of success appear minimal? The consequences of these legal gambles proved severe. Odiong received a life sentence in Texas, while Vasquez became a highly visible symbol in broader political debates surrounding immigration and crime. Neither trial produced an outcome that restored a reputation, protected a ministry, or benefited the institutions associated with the defendants. From there, the article explores whether meaningful precedents exist for priests successfully defeating abuse allegations in criminal trials. The search produces remarkably few examples. Cardinal George Pell's case in Australia is discussed at length, but the article notes that Pell was initially convicted by a jury and only obtained relief after intervention by Australia's High Court. Similarly, Pennsylvania priest Robert Sedolia was acquitted by a jury in 2022, but his case is presented as an unusual exception involving a decades-old allegation and a single count. Beyond those examples, the article argues that it is extraordinarily difficult to identify a broader pattern of priests rejecting plea bargains, proceeding to trial, and emerging vindicated. The discussion then expands beyond the English-speaking world. The article contrasts common law systems, where plea bargaining and jury trials play a major role, with the legal traditions derived from the Napoleonic Code that dominate most of Latin America and significant portions of continental Europe. Although procedural differences between these systems are substantial, the article argues that similar patterns of clerical behavior appear across both traditions. To support this argument, the article surveys cases from Chile, Argentina, France, Paraguay, Mexico, Australia, and the United States. Figures such as Fernando Caradima, Francisco José Cox Junius, Theodore McCarrick, Bernard Prenat, Julio César Grassi, Rafael Flitas López, Alejandro Nicola, and Patricio Cruz Viale are presented not merely as isolated examples of abuse, but as evidence of recurring institutional responses to allegations. Across radically different legal frameworks, the article identifies common themes: denial, procedural resistance, institutional protection, delayed accountability, and a persistent unwillingness to fully confront the consequences of abuse. Underlying these examples is the article's central analytical concept, described as a form of clerical hubris or sacred shield delusion. According to this interpretation, some members of the clergy come to believe that their religious status offers protection from consequences that would normally confront other defendants. The article argues that this mentality helps explain why certain priests continue fighting allegations even when legal precedents, public evidence, or institutional realities suggest that doing so is unlikely to succeed. Theodore McCarrick's apparent willingness to continue contesting proceedings despite laicization, public disgrace, and overwhelming institutional condemnation is presented as one of the most striking illustrations of this phenomenon. The article ultimately contends that the issue extends far beyond individual defendants. Odiong, Vasquez, and the many international examples discussed throughout the piece reveal a broader pattern within parts of the Catholic clergy. Whether operating in common law jurisdictions or under legal systems derived from the Napoleonic Code, some clerics continue pursuing confrontational strategies that deepen institutional damage while offering little realistic prospect of success. The article concludes that these decisions inflict costs not only on victims and public trust, but also on the church itself, raising unresolved questions about responsibility, accountability, and the use of the faithful's donations to finance legal battles whose odds appear overwhelmingly unfavorable.